Support for Modern Love comes from Living Proof. How long could
this podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
You go between washes. Keep your hair cleaner longer while washing less for beautiful, healthier hair. Use the code LOVE at livingproof.com for a free travel-size dry shampoo with your $20 order. We are the science. You are the living proof. And by audible.com, now offering listeners a free 30-day trial membership. Choose from more than 180,000 titles, including audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more. Go to audible.com/modern. That's /modern, and get started today.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is a bonus episode of Modern Love. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last month on the podcast, we heard the story of Catherine Friedman Holland's near-death experience on a flight to Mexico. Catherine Keener read her story, titled Live Without Me, I'll Understand. Here's an excerpt.
No one speaks. There is the smell of something smoldering. A fire? Engine failure? I look into my husband's eyes, begging for reassurance or an explanation. Again, he says, we're okay. The smoldering smell is strong now. And so we say what people say when they think it is the last thing the other will ever hear. I love you. I love you too.
The airplane didn't crash, thankfully, but that brush with death forced Catherine to face the uncomfortable reality that if she had died after a long period of grief and mourning, life would have gone on for her family and friends. So instead of feeling grateful to have survived, Catherine felt numb. I've never had a near-death experience, but when I think about it, Catherine's reaction makes sense. It's jarring to realize not only how fragile your own existence is, but to then be confronted with the humbling truth that when our own individual lights blink out, the world moves on. So what does that mean for how we should live? It's the question, isn't it? The one as old as humanity itself. Many of you have had near-death experiences and have confronted that question, and we're grateful that you shared all that you learned. Here are some of those lessons, starting with Erin from Spokane, Washington.
When I was around 8 years old, I went to an indoor water park that had a water slide about 4 stories high. When I went on it, half of my body slid off of the water slide, and I almost was jettisoned off of it. It scared me so badly that when I got off of the water slide, I was shaking, and I couldn't help but just stand on the concrete and stare up at the water slide, and I didn't go back on it. I got in the minivan, and I remember thinking, I have to live my life to the fullest, this is at 8 years old, and love my parents because this is all I've got, and I only have one life to live.
Erin walked away with a grateful heart. But for some of you, a near-death experience exposed what wasn't working in your life, as it did for Laura in Brooklyn.
I met my husband when I was 19. We got married at 24, and when I was 38, I was about to start fertility treatments. The night before my first procedure, I was mugged at gunpoint outside my house in the safest part of Chicago I've ever lived. They stole my purse and emptied my pockets while keeping the gun pointed at my head. I was told to turn and kneel, and I thought I was going to die, but they drove away. This led to a series of events that brought me to ask for divorce in the following year and start my life anew.
Laura says the experience made her realize how strong she is, which gave her the confidence she needed to start over. So she moved to New York, got a new job, and began painting again. For Anna in Detroit, her near-death experience opened her eyes to problems she'd worked hard to ignore.
The first time I got cancer, I was 38. I had been married for 15 years and had 3 young children. My husband and I got in an argument the day of the surgery because he did not want to take off of work to be there since it would be so simple.
So Anna's parents took her to the hospital. The surgery was not simple. It lasted 7 hours, needed 3 surgeons and a team of medical professionals. Anna battled cancer 2 more times after that, and she says her husband was cold, self-centered, and insensitive through it all.
It's been 6 years since I had any traces of cancer. In that time, I realized that my whole marriage was me trying to make it work at all costs, and I had been losing my soul bit by bit. Living through the 3 years of physical and emotional upheaval of cancer brought me back to me.
Anna got a divorce and says now she and her children are thriving. We heard a different perspective from Ashley. She's from Kansas City, Missouri, and she told us that her near-death experience left her more cynical. It began with the birth of her second child, an emergency C-section.
The surgery began. Then the doctor said, "You've had a bladder injury," which means she accidentally cut it during an incision.
Her newborn son was fine, but Ashley's medical conditions piled up. Kidney trouble, fever, and a serious bacterial infection.
I truly felt like I was in a death spiral, and I just didn't see a scenario in which I left the hospital alive. I learned incredibly difficult lessons about our family when trusted members not only failed to support us in this most difficult time, but downplayed and ignored it. I fear those relationships are irreversibly damaged. At the time, I kept thinking, when I'm dead, it's too late, and if you can't be here now, what's the point?
Fortunately, Ashley recovered with the love and support of her husband. She calls him her anchor. For Ryan of Portland, Oregon, her experience, getting hit by a car while riding her bike, left her longing for an anchor of her own.
I was somersaulting through the air, and I hit the ground about 15 feet away from the car. Because of the severity of my injuries, I had to have 2 surgeries, and I had to take quite a bit of time off of work to fully recover. So I felt pretty isolated. And just for fun, I decided to go on online dating. And I really didn't think anything would come of it, but I ended up chatting with a guy, and we really hit it off, and he asked me out to coffee. I was pretty afraid to tell him about my broken leg because I didn't want him to be turned off by the fact that I couldn't walk, but I just decided that I wasn't going to tell him anything. So the day of the date comes, and I ended up arriving and hobbled in on my crutches, and the first thing I saw was this adorable guy with a giant grin on his face, and the crutches didn't even seem to matter. Now we've been together for almost 7 months, and I don't have a broken leg anymore.
Now, if there's a theme or a thread to your stories of near-death experiences, it's this. Surviving is just the beginning. The real work comes after, figuring out who you are, what you want, and what you value. So I want to end with a story that highlights what we can often forget, that life itself is a gift. It comes from Carrie Klett, an obstetrician based in Burlington, North Carolina. It was Labor Day weekend, 2012, and there were tornado warnings and violent thunderstorms across the area. Carrie was working when a call came into the hospital.
My nurse Ashley answered it and said, "There's somebody on the phone who says there's been a car accident and they're bringing a pregnant patient in that they're doing chest compressions on." And it was probably 45 minutes from the first phone call to the time they arrived. And then we heard the doors slam open. They put her on the OR table and we did a quick ultrasound and said, "Yep, it's a baby." And with one incision, delivered the baby. And a few minutes later, we realized we were not going to be able to save mom. About 8 minutes after the time that the NICU doc got the baby, Ashley, who was working on the resuscitation, said it was like God himself had raised into this child. He took a big breath of air, big gasp, and turned bright pink and started whimpering.
Carrie later learned that the baby's parents, Megan and Casey, were childhood sweethearts and had married just 6 months earlier. Casey survived the accident, but just 9 days later, the baby had a stroke and died.
Casey donated his son's organs. And 9 children that night survived because one child died. And it just taught all of us that night, you never know how fragile life is, that every little decision we make can make a big difference. And the miracle that we saw that night was the most amazing thing I will ever see.
Carrie Klett from Burlington, North Carolina. Thank you to everyone who shared stories with us and were brave enough to make yourselves a little vulnerable. These bonus episodes are so intimate and so intense, I often struggle to find an appropriate way to close our time together. So today, I'm going to lean on the vast wisdom of writer Marilynne Robinson. Her novel Gilead is hands down my favorite book of all time. And here's one of the many passages that stayed with me for years after I first read it. There are two occasions when the sacred beauty of creation becomes dazzlingly apparent, and they occur together. One is when we feel our mortal insufficiency to the world, and the other is when we feel the world's mortal insufficiency to us. In our next bonus episode, we'll hear testimonials from people who completed psychologist Arthur Aaron's 36 Questions, the social experiment at the center of Mandy Len Catron's modern love essay, To Fall in Love with Anyone, Do This. Gillian Jacobs read it on the podcast a few weeks ago, and if you haven't taken a look at those questions yet, here's one apropos of this week's bonus episode. Question 19. If you knew that in 1 year you would die suddenly, would you change anything about the way you're now living?
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. This bonus episode was produced by Ari Daniel, with help from Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. Iris Adler is executive producer of the podcast. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next time. If you've been obsessively following this election, you should check out a new podcast from our partners at the New York Times. It's called The Run-Up, and it features some of the best journalists at the New York Times to help make sense of this final stretch of the campaign. You can find new episodes every Tuesday and Friday on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, or at nytimes.com/therunup. That's nytimes.com/therunup.